are now in episode 4 of the Stripe HIV workshop series. Episode 4 is about common workshop challenges and some solutions. So we are going to talk about challenges that we have experienced in running Stripe HIV workshops and give you some ideas about how these can be addressed. My name is Marieke de Villiers and I am joined here by Ian Cooper and Francois Coetzee. How would you manage the learning activities and content if you have participants of varied levels of knowledge and experience?
So we make use of ground rules that create a safe space for participants. We've mentioned this in one of our previous podcasts. And that encourages people of various levels of knowledge and experience to participate in. And we very clearly state that the primary objective of the workshop is to learn from one another as well as understand and support each other's roles better, and with the ultimate goal of achieving better care for HIV patients. The activities in the modules are very conducive for group discussions where input is required from various clinical disciplines. So it gives a scenario which is often complex and not easily solved by one discipline alone. And it will include aspects which are cross-cutting and relate to the HIV care, including patient-centered care, some aspects of motivational interviewing, and also addressing barriers within the system or within teams related to care and adherence to the HIV medications. So as far as possible, we try to achieve an even distribution of the different healthcare workers and student groups, which we've also covered previously. And then where there are uneven groups, we try to mediate that by having some of the facilitators in those groups or using, say, pharmacists, which often there are few of them at the workshop, to answer some of those questions or assist other groups as well. Yeah, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, that's actually very interesting that you may have you specifically mentioned pharmacists. We often have less pharmacists. So how do you actually, and a pharmacist is not a clinician, so you talk a lot about clinical stuff. So how do you bring in the pharmacist so that they don't feel that they're not making a contribution or they're not really benefiting?
I think, as Francois said, there's quite a lot about medication issues in a lot of the modules, and so they can make a contribution there. And, you know, if one draws on them specifically for that, it makes them feel part of the process. And I think that goes for all professional backgrounds. I mean, the things one can find, because it's looking at issues of team, systems, patient experiences, professional experiences, and so on, one can draw on those aspects when they come up to make sure that everybody feels part of it. And also acknowledging, I think, that when we get to very technical areas, saying, look, you know, this might not be relevant particularly for the therapist, but it's helpful for you to understand something of the background in terms of the patients that you are seeing, etc.
You mentioned something interesting in one of the previous podcasts, that one of your facilitators that's actually become quite involved is a speech-language therapist. Could you maybe just tell us a little bit how she fits in and how she found it?
She's done such a good job and has really been a very enthusiastic part of the workshops, and so she will facilitate modules or parts of modules, and it just emphasizes, I think, some of the points we've been making around the fact that it's not about content expertise. Running the workshop is very much about the process and drawing content from the people. The participants are those who have the knowledge that we can draw on. Yes, amongst the team we have people who have particular expertise who can step in if we have gaps, But there's, you know, plenty of other ways to fill those gaps in as well.
Yeah. I think that's a particularly empowering statement. And it'll help people who think, oh, no, I don't know much about HIV. But they can still facilitate the emerging of the knowledge from the groups. And then, of course, you have the learning guides. Mm. So now that actually leads us nicely into the next question. What would you do if someone asks you a question that you cannot answer?
Well, Mariki, that very much depends on the type of question. If the question requires the input of a content expert, for example, a question about drug-induced liver injury, I'm likely to relay the question to a content expert, and that might be a facilitator or somebody within the groups at the tables, and allow that person to give their input. And when the question is more of a generic nature, I'd often relay the question to the whole group, or it might be a more of a philosophical or value-based question. I'd allow the group to discuss it and come up with an answer. And sometimes participants ask questions about systems or local practices and how that differs or relates to some guidelines. Then I'm likely to ask local managers or those that are familiar with the policies to answer that.
Sorry, Francia, can I just ask what you mean by a manager?
So a facility manager would be, okay. The person or the CEO or the clinical manager in charge.
We haven't had a lot of them, but we have had a number of them workshops. But sometimes you might have a professional nurse in charge of a clinic, for example, who's there. Yeah.
And occasionally we can't come up with a suitable answer. Then we might turn to Dr. Google or commit to having to look up the answer or talk to the relevant people and come back the next day with an answer.
I think very important in this is modeling the fact that we can't all know all the answers and actually admitting. And that's something that's difficult for many of us as teachers, and especially those of us who are more senior, to actually say, well, I don't know. How are we going to find out? And if we are wanting people to get into continuous learning, part of that learning is about how we find information. So it's a very important modeling process.
Right. You've both talked touched on using devices. So some facilitators don't want people to use devices in a, you know, like a smartphone or an iPad during a workshop. But it seems that you are incorporating the use of that in your workshops.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. It's the way people learn these days. So we can't deny that or separate them.
Do you provide Wi-Fi in all the workshops for people to connect to the internet?
We try.
We keep on trying.
That's one of the challenges that we've had, especially in some of our rural sites, is that it's not always so easy. But yeah, ideally we do it. But of course, people with smartphones usually have their own data.
Okay, let's come to some of the difficulties that we sometimes have in workshops. So how do you manage a situation where a participant expresses some opinions that might be offensive to others in the group?
So it varies. Sometimes somebody would say something that's a bit offensive, and you can kind of let it fade away as a workshop continues. Occasionally, in one situation, we had somebody that ranted for several minutes about an issue and made quite sweeping statements. And the workshop group, actually, you could hear them groaning in the background. That it wasn't that great. And at first we validated this person is entitled to that opinion, although we might not agree with it, or that the workshop might not agree, but they're definitely entitled to that. And then try to link those statements or that argument to some positive value related to patient care. So it might be something like, I can see you're very passionate about patient care, but this might not be the context to attack somebody personally and the right place to do that. We are here to learn together and just bring us back to the focus of the workshop. And the idea is not to have a conflict situation where people start arguing with another. We really want to avoid that. And I think that's quite important that you early on just bring back the focus of the workshop, that it's about interprofessional learning and it's about improvement of HIV care. And we recognize that there are frustrations and challenges in the clinical environments, but primarily we are here to learn together and to find potential solutions. We might not find all the solutions, but have some potential solutions. And also, we see that the workshop provides opportunities to encourage certain attitudes towards teamwork as well as patient-centered care. And we really hope for that and try to support that. Where an offense was now caused and the statement was such that it was totally unacceptable, might have to remind that person that we've agreed upon certain ground rules and that we especially continue to respect everyone for their person, and that might be necessary at some stage to speak to that person individually and just say to them, listen, this was a bit out of line. It's against the ethos of the workshop, and we can't really allow that.
But I can see that you apply one of the principles of family medicine of unconditional positive regard. So you validate the individual, but not necessarily what the individual says.
Yes.
So you need to be quite skillful in that, and not to lose the person, but also to bring over the values of the workshop.
And not to make it worse by reacting oneself. You know, and one particular example where Francois was actually facilitating was so good. I mean, I could just feel the hackles of everybody rising in the group as this person was speaking. And myself, internally, I was feeling like I wanted to get up and sort of give this person my strong opinion. Yes. And Francois was just so good in terms of, you know, validating them as a person and recognize the response, but saying, you know, maybe this isn't the time for us to get into that kind of detail and discuss that now. So can we put that aside and go back to the focus of what we are discussing now and so on? So in that case, deflecting it really rather than dealing with it head on.
So I think this discussion was very useful on managing difficult opinions in a group.
And I think what's significant is the nature of the STRIPE HIV workshops. They allow for this sort of thing because it's not just around, you know, clinical facts, if I can put it. It is around how you deal with difficult situations. So this particular discussion arose in something around, you know, how you deal with people's attitudes towards HIV, and the issue of sex education came up and so on, and that was very, very strong. But those things may arise because we are dealing with values and preferences and things like that in the workshops.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. And people are saying, I remember that workshop in Uppington, they are saying in the end that the workshop has actually managed to change their attitudes about certain things. So I think for the facilitators listening to the podcast, using these tools will help you also to make a difference maybe in attitudes of people during these workshops. Okay, so another difficult one is, how do you now end a heated or emotional discussion when you don't have much time and you've got limited time for the activity?
Yeah, very similar to what we've said now previously. It might be necessary to remind participants of what the primary objectives of the workshop are. And it's also important to state quite early in that discussion that you're observing that it's gaining some momentum and we have limited time and that we are trying to stick to the time limit. Then, as Jan mentioned earlier, we try to be flexible. We can see sometimes it's important for people to get a feel or a good understanding of how to deal with certain difficult issues. And alternatives to just letting the discussion run its full time out is to offer alternatives like continuing the discussion over tea time or during lunchtime when it's apparent that it's not going to be controlled easy or it needs some further discussion. And the whole group can also be consulted to make a choice to then decide either to continue the discussion and thrash out all the points about it, or that we rather end it now and stick to the time and make sure we enjoy our lunch together.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes the group's willing to sacrifice some lunchtime, okay. And then we do that.
Right, okay. So you diffuse it a bit. But you also, of course, validate it by saying, I can see there's a lot of energy in this room about this topic, that we're all enthusiastic about it. But let's just look at our workshop aims, our activity aims, and the time we have and how we deal with it. Okay, so then sometimes you have people that ask irrelevant questions or they talk off the topic. So how do you deal with that challenge?
Yeah, this can be quite challenging. Indeed, if somebody is a very strong personality and they're dominating discussions and have very strong feelings about a topic, and sometimes it's necessary to interrupt the person, and if they kind of persist, maybe raise your hand so that you can make sure they get your attention. And then just by asking the person to just state, how is this comment or this argument they're making relating to the question of that specific activity? And sometimes I might say something like, I hear what you have to say, but this is the question of the activity, and how does this fit in with that question? And sometimes it's also necessary to just clearly state and say, well, this question or this statement is a bit off topic, and it's important that we now return to the focus of the activity.
Yeah. I think as we spoke about earlier with the small groups, so in the large group, it's easy for a group to start moving off track, and that's what the role of the facilitator is to bring us back on track and to make sure. Because once one starts going down a side path, it very easily continues on that, and the irrelevance increases, and the more talking off topic, and you start losing people on the outskirts. Yes. People start feeling that this is not what I came for, and then they start having their own side conversations and so on.
So this can also happen that with a hierarchy, say if there is a senior manager present, but I must say it hasn't really happened in our workshops. I think the tone that you set in the workshop from the start with your ground rules, the way that you set up the groups, the way that you actually let the group self-regulate actually is helps the process. So, okay, so then how do you deal with participants that dominate in the small group? In the small group discussions, it's just one person that talk. Or when there's feedback to the larger group, it's just the same person that talk all the time. How do you deal with that?
So this is it's quite important to deal with quite early on, and because this if somebody would dominate the group or in discussions in the large group, that really undermines the whole process of what we want to achieve with the workshop. And I do think it's quite important to deal with it early on, rather than allowing it to carry on. Then other participants withdraw. So It can be quite simple, but just being part of that small group or being at the table and after somebody's made a statement to just ask a question to another participant that's not as actively participating and say, okay, what's your thoughts about this matter and what do you think? Do you think that could work? And a gentle reminder to the group can also help, just saying, dear group, just see that that you all get a chance and that you all participate. We really like all of your ideas. And sometimes it means just for a facilitator to remain at that table. If people are moving around between groups, just a facilitator making sure, not necessarily having to comment, but that the presence of somebody overseeing the process also sometimes encourages that more people participate. When it comes to the larger group, if a group is allowing one person to dominate, we'll just remind that group and say, really, we want all of you to participate rather than one person participate, because we agreed upon some ground rules and please make sure that we follow them. And then if somebody is very opinionated and dominating discussions in a large group, we will gently cut them short and ask a specific person, something like, Jeffrey, I hear you in this matter, but later, what are your thoughts on this topic? So then just making sure that somebody else can also voice an opinion.
Which makes me think of how do you get the person who never speaks actually also to contribute?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where it's difficult to do that in the very big group, because it's easy to miss when you've got 50 plus people, and that's where the small groups come in and the facilitators in the small group to making sure that at least in the small group people are contributing, even if they don't feel comfortable to contribute in the large group. And you will have people who don't want to speak in the large group, and that's okay.
I do find it useful to move around in the room. Then you get a better feel of who's contributing and who's not.
So while the small group are discussing.
While they're discussing, so that would be during activity. So activity which you are facilitating a module in. Okay. And even when you're eliciting feedback from the small groups, you get also a feel from who's giving more feedback.
Okay.
And then you can say something like, what do you perhaps think or can contribute to that? Okay, thank you, Ian and Francois. Anything else on common workshop challenges and some solutions?
We might have to update this after we've run some more workshops,
because
yes,
right.
We might face some more challenges, but these probably cover the ones that we've
experienced
at the moment.
Yeah. So then this is then the end of episode 4 on challenges that we have experienced in running the workshops, ideas how these can be addressed, and we trust this will be useful to you. Thank you.